Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm Andrew Horowitz. And I'm Andrew Horowitz. It's DH Unplug time without the D, just the H. We'll be talking about some of the market issues here. Seems that John C. Dvorak is nowhere to be found. I'm hearing from a variety of people that he's, I don't know, somewhere on the Mississippi River maybe, or traveling around. Must have taken all of his mobile devices and turned them off, or he's so deep in the sticks that they just don't work. So we're going to cover some of the more important highlights of what's going on here. It's get quick to a timestamp because John usually does that. It's April 17th, 2018. All right, let's see what we got here going on with the markets and what's happening. A couple of things to update. Some more crazy storms around here. We've had, I don't know what's going on with the tornadoes. These tornado season is quite ridiculous. Even though we don't have a tornado season in Florida, we have hurricane seasons, but somehow we're getting all these storms whipped up out of nowhere and getting tornado warnings on my phone. I don't know if it's something that they just started doing or if it's something that we never had to deal with before. In other words, I don't know if the tech is there that they just started sending it out, but something's a little bit weird here. Well, it's tax day, the day that you're supposed to be putting your taxes into the government, filing them online, sending them in with a postmark for today. And lo and behold, hours before the midnight tax deadline, the IRS has a little bit of a meltdown. Their page for paying taxes, where you pay your taxes using your bank account, crashed. So it's called the direct pay page, which allows you to transfer funds and, you know, pay your taxes through your checking account. Seemed to have crashed at about just before 2 o'clock this afternoon. And Treasury Secretary Mnuchin said that, well, we're going to extend it now. You have an extra day to pay your tax online. But I think that if you are actually filing and sending in a check, you have to put in your by the mail today. So it has to be postmarked by tonight. So I'm not sure what's happening with that. But just one more government flu-fla. So that's good. Well, markets are out of the doldrums. Markets had a positive week last week after extreme volatility on a daily basis. By the way, it seems kind of weird not having John talk, at least, you know, having me go back and forth with him on this and having some commentary. I feel like I'm in a solo room. Very odd. I do the Disciplined Investor podcast, and oftentimes I'm either doing it myself or we have a guest on, but the front end part, the first 15 or 20 minutes of that podcast, I'm usually talking about markets and things like that also, but it doesn't seem as, I don't know, kind of, it's very odd. I feel kind of naked or something. Very weird. But the bottom line is that the markets have been moving back up a little bit. There was a lot of volatility, as we know, that have crept into markets in 2018. And we saw that big correction just a few weeks ago and back towards the lows of February. But all of a sudden, yeah, here we are. Earnings season is coming on and that volatility has shrunk down significantly. The VIX has come into just above 15 it closed at today. And we have a little bit maybe either a calm after the storm or a calm into the storm. I'm not quite sure where that is. So the thing is that you have to look at this as a really interesting play because what you have here, oh, hang on, we have John Dvorak on the phone. Hold the phone here for a second. Hello? Hey, what's going on? All right, no problem. I'm just chatting with some of the people on the chat room, kind of giving them some of the highlights of what's going on here. So, all right, we'll pick it up next week. All right, see ya. All right, no problem. Bye. Well, there you go. He couldn't make it. He couldn't get back in time. I'll find out. I'll find out more about that. What was I saying here? What was I saying? Oh, the calm before the storm. So, okay. So it's been set up very interesting because what you have here is a situation where we had all this news flow and all this headline risk and all this concern going into the last few weeks. And if you look at what happened on Friday, you have to realize something. What happened on Friday was pretty fascinating because it was the close of the markets, the close of the futures. And just when the futures closed, what happened? We see that the announcement of a Syrian a strike on Syria happened. I mean, come on. You think that was time for any other reason aside from the fact that the markets closed and the futures markets closed? So everything is closed. There can be no reaction in the financial markets. And they go and do this. Now, for two reasons. First, they do this because markets are closed, reactions can't happen. They do it so close to the end of the day because they realize they need as much time as possible to calm everything down before futures open again on Sunday. Does that make sense? This is very well orchestrated from a variety of angles. So the markets seem to have concluded that the worst is over now. It's time to get back into buying mode because it was proclaimed by everybody in the U.S. that it was a total success. The Syrian situation is under control. They bombed the places they want to bomb. It was a precision strike. Everything is just fine. But what was it really? It was nothing more than a slap on the hand and a show to the world that, yep, hey, do this again, and we're going to make sure you are the bad guys and we're the good guys. So what's happening here is that it worked perfectly because into the close on Friday, there was some concern, and we saw that markets slumped down. Last trading hour of the week, markets slumped down. Even though last week was an up week, it did slump down about 0.5% into the close. And then Monday, we gapped open. And now we're not hearing anything really about more tariffs. We're not hearing anything about an attack on Amazon, aside from this sales tax issue that's being posed to the Supreme Court right now. We're not hearing anything about further military action. So right now, everything's nice and calm. So earnings season is also underway, and there's a really interesting to pay attention to because there's an incorrect commentary being espoused by experts that have been appearing on TV lately. They keep on saying that the recent weakness in stocks is because companies are in a blackout period. This blackout period, they're talking about it before earnings season, which is partially true. And they say that once the earnings season starts to pick up in activity, and we see that more earnings come out, buying is going to pick up also. And that's also partially true. But the way that they're pushing the idea, they make it seem that as if once earnings season starts, all companies can start buying again. They say, well, you know, blackout period here. That's why we're seeing all this, you know, lack of buying interest. I don't know what happened, by the way, to the buying interest from institutions and retail and everybody else, but they seem to be stating on one hand that it is so important for corporations to be buying their own stock back. That's what's holding up the market. However, they talk about all the other fundamental issues that are out there. And here's why both those things are partially true. And they're not really true. It's kind of a falsehood. Because the actual definition, if you look at the actual definition of what a blackout period is, under SEC rules, companies can't buy back any of their shares. And some of the insiders also cannot participate. They can't buy back any of their shares during the 5-week period prior to their earnings release and also 2 days after the company's results are released. So let's just think about that. So the stock buyback programs are put on halt 5 weeks, approximately 5 weeks before their earnings come out for a company. Now, for a company, not for earnings season, but for a company. And of course, we know that earnings come out at various dates. We just saw that a few companies came out this week, maybe about 25 different companies from the latter part of last week into this week. And now what's happening is that we're seeing this whole market move up. Everybody's like, yeah, well, so companies can buy back their stocks again. Well, wait a minute. If JP Morgan put their earnings out on Friday, they have to wait 2 days till tomorrow, really, to start buying back their stock. So that's just JP Morgan. Goldman Sachs put out their earnings today. That means they have till Thursday until they could start buying back their stock. So therefore, while there is this blackout period, it's different for each company and not related to the start of earnings season. Maybe it's semantics, but some companies may be reporting 3 weeks out from the start of earnings season. So I'm calling this fake blackout news or half-truths. Probably more like half-truths. There is some truth to this about this whole blackout situation. But I don't know. Some of the things that are said, and one of the things that really bothers me is that, you know, they start saying these things and everybody's like, nobody says, oh, that's not right. No, nobody on TV's, you have that wrong, sir. So what happens? The next guy gets on and says the same thing. Everybody's like, uh-huh. And it becomes all of a sudden an accepted comment. It becomes a truth somehow. Everybody's like, uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, that's, uh-huh. It's the stupidest thing ever. Anyway. Earnings, we saw bank earnings coming out. Interestingly, we saw a variety of companies, JP Morgan, Citigroup, Wells Fargo come out. That was on Friday. And earnings were good on the top and bottom line. Top line, by the way, means the revenues, you know, the total that comes in. The bottom line, when it all sifts down to what the earnings are, net of expenses and charges and all that, that's the bottom line. However, there was some tepid outlook that was mentioned in conference calls that quickly turned a lot of these gains that we saw pre-market once the earnings were announced into losses, in particular for all three, JP Morgan, Citi, and Wells Fargo. So there's a lot of optimism that has been already baked in. Even though we saw that market correction back in February, then another one in last month, that came in pretty hard and beat up the banks. And there was some concern about the yields rising and there was not enough of a yield curve spread to get all that that was going on. However, there's still a lot baked into the fact that they're going to get a lot of benefit from taxes and the economy is pretty strong. More people working, that's also good for banks and the reduced regulation. So a lot of that is going into this. And everybody was like, well, last quarter, we saw that the banks tried to pull forward. They did. They pulled forward a lot of the benefits from the taxes. They took a lot of write-offs, they did all sorts of things, kind of threw it in their last quarter. And everybody was like, well, this quarter is going to be a great quarter. And the fact is that it was a good quarter. No question about it. Bank of America had record earnings. However, something in their outlook, they had this kind of outlook that was really worrisome about the potential for tariffs and the potential for some of the economic climate around the world. And there was a variety of things that were really seemed to be concerning. Goldman Sachs today beat on both ends as well and had a pretty solid quarter in their fixed income. That was really good because the other companies didn't have a good quarter in their fixed income department. Most banks had a really good 3 months of trading. As a matter of fact, Bank of America didn't have a down day in their trading department, in their trading unit for the quarter, which is thanks to Mr. Volatility, of course. Stocks were up 2-3%, turned down. Same thing with Goldman Sachs today. Goldman Sachs was up about 1%. It ended down about 1.7% today. It seems to be the same pattern going on with banks right now. And Wells Fargo, their chart looks miserable. You should take a look at the chart. We have these charts over on DH Unplugged. You can go over there after the show and check on the show notes and see what's going on there. Netflix. This was impressive. Netflix was up for earnings. A lot of anticipation about, you know, how many additions, net new subscribers they would add to their list of subscribers, because that's how they make money. One of the things about Netflix is it's a good mousetrap. Once you get in, you're kind of like, I'll keep it. It's what, $12, $14 a month, $9 a month, whatever the price is that you pay. And they inch your pricing up ever so gently, and you're like, I'll stay. I'm not even sure what I pay right now. I think it's $14.95 for the multi-pack with the 4K package. Now, they came in, they beat earnings by a penny. They came in at 64 cents versus 63 cents on the Capital IQ consensus. Revenues beat ever so slightly. But here's the thing that really got people excited. In the U.S., their streaming subscribers added a total of 1.96 million versus their guidance of adding 1.45 last quarter. So they came in, you know, like 400,000 more subscribers in the U.S. than they thought. International was unbelievable. 5.46 million new subscribers added, or actually net subscribers. Some leave, some come. But net new subscribers, 5.64 million versus 4.9 million guidance. Estimates were about 5 million. So they blew it out on both sides of that. That really is unbelievable. Their guidance was even better. They saw the next quarter EPS at 79 cents versus 66 cents. That's a big gap on the upside. In other words, a lot of companies will sandbag. They'll hold back. Doesn't seem like Netflix is doing that. They see the revenues next quarter at $3.93 billion versus $3.89 billion consensus. And also they're seeing the U.S. streaming additions for subscribers up an additional 1.2 million and domestic on the domestic side and 5 million on international, which is both above estimates also. Now, here's the kicker. Revenue grew 43% year over year, the fastest pace in the company's history. This is all the streaming business. Due to a 25% increase in average paid streaming memberships and a 14% rise in the price. And today, Netflix closed at an all-time high. Pretty impressive. Now, what was really impressive about this, that I thought was impressive at least, was, you know, Netflix is one of these companies that has these crazy valuations. And if you're a fundamental analyst, you look at this and you're like, all right, let me see the numbers. You look at the numbers and you're like, oh, nah, I can't buy that. You know, look at these PE ratios. Look at this number. You know, the numbers are off the wall. Their valuation is just crazy. And there's a lot of companies like that, right? We look at Amazon, same kind of situation. Tesla, we look at that as a crazy situation. But, you know, investors like it for some reason. There's something in there. But what was interesting about this was about four months ago. This stock actually came into our screen that we invest in for the managed growth strategy that I manage. And when it came in, I'm like, wait. How did Netflix make our screen? Because we have to have things like consistency of earnings growth and revenue growth and margin expansion. We have to have high ROE. There's a whole bunch of things that go into this process of finding stocks that meet these criteria. And I was like, wait a minute. Netflix never really made it before. And all of a sudden, they're in there. And I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty impressive. And we own them, full disclosure. So, I mean, there's times you can, you know, kind of have some fun and maybe short it on some questionable news or market movement and things like that. But I got to tell you, this is a powerhouse. IBM came out with earnings today. Quarter one EPS was $2.45 versus $2.42, which was 3 cents better. A little bit better on the revenue as well. And right after the earnings came out, the stock took a hit, down $8 from the close. So that will put a little bit of damper on the Dow Jones Industrial Average futures for tomorrow. Where are we now in those? Hang on, let's take a look. Yeah, futures are up about 50, but the fair value. So right now we're still looking at an indication of a plus 20, but that's because the rest of the companies are rallying in there in terms of the futures because it's going to be about a 50-point hit from this. IBM's just, you know, there was some slowdown in their key and core areas that they're trying to focus on. And the company just looks like, as John would say, dead money to me. IBM just does not excite me from a company at all, from a company standpoint at all. CSX, the transportation company, you know, the trains that you see, they had earnings of 78 cents versus 66 cents. That was a major number. And again, a lot of these estimates have been ratcheting up. We've seen that analysts are actually increasing their estimates into the actual earnings print, which is very unusual. Usually what happens is that analysts have a really good, they look out, oh, things are really rosy, things are good, and they put their estimates out, let's say, a year in advance. And as they get closer to the date, they bring them down. Why? Well, on the sell side, they want to make sure that companies can actually get over the hurdle and therefore it's good for the stock. So they're, you know, there's something baked into that, that they have a natural process of desiring the stock to go higher. But when you see that analysts are starting to raise prices and also raise their earnings estimates into the print, that's pretty impressive. So it's even more impressive when we see that CSS, the estimates were 66 cents and they came in at 78 cents. It's a 12 cent beat. That's pretty significant. Revenues beat also. They had $2.88 billion versus $2.8 billion of estimate on revenue. Stock is up 6% after hours. So here's a summary of the action thus far in earnings season, because I think that's what the important thing here is really that we need to look at. So it seems that there's a good amount of beats. Very early, by the way, in this earnings season. We're just in the first few days of the major names coming out. But it seems like there's a good amount of beats that have been expected because everybody thought that we'd see some good numbers. When you're starting to fool around with the opportunity to have big stock buybacks coupled with tax cuts, we don't know exactly how this is going to play out, right? Are they going to pull them all forward? Are they going to use them up over time? How's this all going to play out? But earnings are definitely up. Big beats are being rewarded if outlook is also good. So we saw that with the banks, that didn't happen, right? We saw good beats, both top and bottom. Everything looked healthy, but their outlook was not so good. Simple beats, if you just simply beat like IBM did, a couple of cents here, up a little bit here, that's hitting the price. You need to kind of hit it out of the ballpark right now. So most stocks are trying to get back above their bases that have been forming since the February, and I'll even say maybe the late March correction. So there's a lot of damage still done to the charts and to the prices. But we are seeing that there is a desire for people to buy back in because this look of, well, the economy is good, the employment picture is good, all that's good. And there is a good amount of optimism over the earnings situation because of tax cuts and because companies are doing really well. We have a major tailwind with the dollar still going down, which we're going to talk about in a second because it's something important here to look at. So, I think that's pretty interesting. Now, somebody in the chat room asked me to mention Tesla. Now, Tesla. Tesla falls into that genre of stocks that the valuation is a real head scratcher. Now, not every stock that has a crazy valuation is actually a good stock. We look at Amazon as a great example. We look at Netflix as another of a stock that's very difficult to value correctly according to most commonly used metrics that will enable us to feel good about the stock from a fundamental standpoint, whether you're a value or a growth investor, or even a momentum investor, or something else that is looking to really get the names that have great momentum. Because again, when you look at this and you see the numbers that they're putting out over the years and the actual earnings and ratios, it's hard to bite into if you're really on a fundamental basis. But Tesla, on the other hand, it seems to me to be really out of control. They came out with a number tonight of 6,000 cars they're going to try to produce per week by the end of the summer. It appears to me that Elon Musk, who I think is a genius, brilliant, unbelievable, very, well-respected, and just amazing. But I think that this whole Tesla, the fact that their bonds have been cut dramatically, their rating, to junk, that they have about $3 billion of excess baggage with the bonds that they inherited or that they brought in due to the purchase of the solar company. Can't remember the name. The solar company they brought in. They halted production and using the guys that they're trying to do that in order to bring up production. There was some commentary over the weekend about some of the automation and robotics they have that are really messing things up. There was a lawsuit against them about using inferior product designs materials in their product manufacturing process. SolarCity, thank you. And there is just a whole host of things that just boggle my mind why the stock is where it is. It seems to me that, now we know anything's possible, and a lot of expenses are being pushed into this to build out their whole infrastructure, but they're burning through just billions of dollars. They have a negative cash flow. And it seems to me that while it is exciting that they have a rocket ship company and they have a solar company and they have a electric car company and all that stuff, they're still at the end of the day a manufacturer, right? They're selling a product. They can't do what Amazon did. Amazon basically undercut prices and had third-party sellers and created, well, not to mention their entire, the whole technology center they have with AWS and all that. But aside from that, it's a whole different deal. So I don't know. Tesla doesn't excite me. Doesn't excite me at all. It seems to me to be a bit of a, I'm not going to say Ponzi scheme. I'm not going to say that. But there's something a little weird with the company. Stock was up about 2% after the close tonight on the announcement that they will be able to build 6,000 cars. I mean, that's the one thing that, of course, he's really good at, right? Elon Musk is really good at putting out a long carrot so that people can keep their eye on that rather than see what's going on at the company. So, all right, what else do we get to talk about here? China's gross domestic product rose 6.8% during the first quarter. Magic, just absolutely brilliant. I mean, how great is it that this country can match the estimates every single time that they put out a number? I mean, that's magical. Right? Everybody thought, yep, 6.8% is what we believe is going to be coming out. Magic, and it's going, 6.8%. Like clockwork. I'm not sure if there's anything, but TrimTabs today announced that U.S. companies announced $305 billion in cash takeovers and stock buybacks in the first quarter, more than double the growth of the $131 billion in pre-tax wages and salaries. So this whole idea that this tax cut is going to be putting a lot of money in the pockets of you and me and workers around the country is kind of being proven a little bit not happening. Let's put it that way. All right. I'll mention something, by the way, something that we don't mention that often on the show. I'm not sure if we're going to. I told you, John's not here, so I'm not sure. I'm recording this. I'm not sure if I'm going to put it out or not. We'll see what happens. But one of the things that I don't mention that often is that, you know, this is actually streaming live, 9 o'clock at night on Tuesdays, every Tuesday. And we have a chat room. Everybody in the chat room, say hello. Hello. And you can actually join in and listen live to the DH Unplugged podcast. Go over to dhunplugged.com on the right-hand side. At about 8:45 in the evening, we do the pre-chat warm-up. And you can actually go in there and just chat along and listen live. So if you like what we're talking about, if you like finding out before we actually put it out in the podcast version, you can listen on the streaming live part of it over on DH Unplugged. All right, now, this is probably going to piss everybody off or some people off a little bit here. I don't know if you saw the tweet this week from President Trump, but the way I was going to do this was a little bit of a game with John, and I said, riddle me this. So let's look at the chart below. Now, let me give you an image here of what we're looking at. We're looking at a chart of the U.S. dollar versus the Chinese renminbi, or the yuan.
Yuan.
When I was in China, how'd they say it? They said, yuan. So now we have this chart going back to, we'll say, mid-2016. And mid-2016, the dollar was rising against the Chinese currency, and it peaked in about the beginning of 2017. All right? Let's get that image kind of sloping higher. And it peaked in about 2017, right in the beginning. Since then, it's been falling. It's gone from about 7 to 6.25. Now, somebody could do some quick math on that. It's about roughly 10%. The U.S. dollar has fallen against the Chinese yuan by about 10% since 2017. Okay, we got that? All right. Now, here's the interesting thing. There was a tweet. I'm going to read it. Russia and China are playing the currency devaluation game as the U.S. keeps raising interest rates. Not acceptable. And by the way, Russia, their currency looks the same as yuan, give or take. The only reason that it rolled over so hard recently was the sanctions that we put on it last week or so, and the ruble just cracked really hard, maybe 7 or 8% or something like that. Aside from that move, the dollar has been coming down drastically throughout from 2017. We're talking about a year and 3 or 4 months already. So I'm not sure what's happening with that. Now, that did put pressure on the dollar yesterday when this came out. So I'm not exactly sure if that is just like, okay, the hell with the facts. I'm just going to tell you something I want you to believe. And maybe, let me go this way. I never thought of it this way. Maybe the idea is that they're still trying to pump up their currencies or bring down the currencies. And we're just having a harder time taking ours down. I don't know. But yes, the bottom line is this is actually good for U.S. exports and the U.S. economy, generally speaking. It's not good for the potential for inflation. But when we have a dollar that is moving down, that's actually good for our companies. So it's a tailwind. I just didn't understand where this tweet was coming from. And I'd like to find out if I can, if anybody knows, what am I not seeing here? I guess that's the point. I just don't understand what I'm not seeing here. Because if we're saying that China and Russia, and we're really focusing on them, have been involved in this currency game and devaluing it of sorts, as we keep raising interest rates, and even though our dollar keeps on going lower regularly, I'm not exactly sure what devaluation game is going on unless they're devaluing against other currencies. And so therefore the dollar is not as competitive to other players like the euro, maybe. I don't know. The zloty, or I don't know what else. I don't know. You know, maybe the yen. I'm not sure. So maybe we just don't have the full corner on the currency game. Maybe we want the entire currency devaluation game to be won by us across the board. Maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the point. All right, what else we got here? Europe. Europe zone economic growth starting to moderate a bit. We have this strong, because why? Of a stronger currency. And and analysts are saying they're gonna take a further hit from the ongoing trade disputes between the U.S. and China. This is a poll that was done by Reuters. So just to give you the other side of this, we're seeing that there is some concern about the Eurozone. Because the Eurozone, you know, we're seeing that the ECB is continuing on their discussion that there is good growth there and they're going to cut off the stimulus, not cut off, but slow down their stimulus. And we've been seeing the euro rising. So there has been a really big push by most institutional investors that I've talked to, mutual funds in particular, about investing outside the U.S., putting money in Europe and in particular the emerging markets. It's something they've really been focusing on. And I find it really interesting that we're seeing that in Europe, it's starting to slow down a little bit there because of stronger currency. And I'm not sure how that's going to play out if we continue to see the dollar go down, because obviously the dollar goes down to a point that it makes it very difficult for us to buy goods from other places that the currency is a lot stronger. I mean, if you have a choice to buy something, right? So if you have in a year's span, a 10% reduction on a currency, you look to a company like a Caterpillar and you say you're out there in the world. You're like, I'm going to build a road. Where am I going to look? Okay, my currency and your prices. So Caterpillar now has a price that's X. Well, X minus 10% because the currency has been devalued over the last year. Or I'm going to buy from another place that their currency has risen. So it's X plus 2 or 3%. So now what happens? Well, Caterpillar can raise their prices slightly. And the other company with the higher currency rate at that country will have to reduce their prices, therefore bringing the profitability back to the U.S. and hurting the other company. That's kind of the game. Okay. Now, over to South Korea, since we're in that zone of international discussion. North and South Korea are taking their time in meeting and now very nicely saying that they're going to be announcing a permanent end to the officially declared military conflict between the two countries, because you know that they're still at war, I think, technically. They never signed a peace agreement. So they've been still at war all these years. Starbucks is temporarily closing more than half its domestic stores in the next month so employees can undergo a racial bias training in a response to an arrest of two black men in one of its cafes in Philadelphia. The coffee chain plans to shut more than 8,000 company-owned stores during the afternoon of May 29th. So I guess pretty much between, let's call it 1 and 4 or 5 or 6, they're going to be closing down the stores and you're getting racial bias training. And I guess that means that if you have a racial bias, that somehow in 4 or 5 hours, you'll be cured. How do you like that? You'll be cured. But now the other thing that's interesting to note about this is that it's going to be about 59% of their locations are going to be doing this because they're owned by Starbucks directly, whereas the rest are licensed locations. So I guess you got to be careful when you walk in. So if anybody, listen, if you are any other race besides straight up white, I guess the point is you're going to have to be careful and see maybe there's a sign in the window that says we've had racial bias training or racial bias training approved or something like that. You know, you got to look at it before you go in because you don't know if you ask to go to the bathroom. And I'm a Jew. I'm going to walk in and go ask for the bathroom and say, Jay, Jew, you're not allowed in here because they didn't have their training. Yeah, silly. Nuts. Yeah, kumbaya. Mark Mobius, an 81-year-old investment guru. You know, this is the guy that came up with the whole idea of emerging markets and how, you know, globalization is going to be the big thing. And he came up with this like 25 years ago. I remember. I was there. Now, he believes this U.S. stock market is set for a 30% correction that will essentially wipe out the gains that we saw over the last 2 years, I guess. You know, it's just going to take an L out. And here's what's interesting. He says, I can see a 30% drop. When consumer confidence is at an all-time high as it is in the U.S., that is not a good sign. All right, somebody's got to tell me what that means. First of all, I guess maybe if you're a contrarian, when we see an all-time high, it has nowhere to go but down, maybe? Or maybe he's saying that with consumer confidence at an all-time high, there's too much exuberance. We're not seeing that in anything besides the consumer confidence index. We're not seeing a major uptick in retail sales. Last week we saw a 0.2% increase in retail sales when we strip out automobiles, 0.6 when we add back in automobiles. But if you strip it out and you get the core, you saw a 0.2% increase in retail sales, nothing. We see that spending is slowing down, savings is increasing. So I'm not sure what this has to do with anything. Most seasoned analysts and economists say that consumer confidence is an important thing to look at, but don't look at it to drive markets. He also said the market looks to me to be waiting for a trigger that will cause it to tumble. So I guess we have a very sensitive market that you have to have trigger warnings, I guess. He also says he can't predict what that event might be, perhaps a natural disaster or a war with North Korea. Now, if we just stop there, I'm like, I don't know. He gives no facts about timing, gives no facts about really the potential why something will be doing what it's doing. He doesn't give us any kind of really good calculus on this whole process and, you know, maybe even historical reference. So there's nothing really there that's, in my opinion, solid that I can sink my teeth into. But one thing that he did talk about that I thought was interesting, he said that his basic thought is a trigger could be that this trigger that could happen could cause a cascade as ETFs represent so much of the market today that they'll make it worse. That I've been talking about for a while, that it's either all in or all out, right? People are putting all their money or a lot of money into ETFs that buy the whole market. So when you're buying that, you're buying the whole market. You're not buying stock A, stock B, stock C. So all this money has been funneled into index funds because they're cheap and the advisors say, that's the way to do it for several years now. And as you're doing that, what's happening is that you're really setting up that everybody who owns this that may want to sell out one day, when they do sell, the liquidity is very low, especially because you have all these stock buybacks. We've talked about this 100 times. And if you haven't heard me talk about it here, you listen on the Disciplined Investor podcast. I talk about it there and explain this at length. And there is some fact there. I think there is some truth in the fact that you have a lot of money that are in ETFs, a lot of money that is passively invested. And when you have all that money that's passively invested in ETFs like that, you can see this cascade happen. So I think there is something to think about there, and it makes sense, but not to go a lot, not to go kind of crazy with the 30% drop here. It's possible, but again, it doesn't give us a lot there. Moving over to Bitcoin for a second. Bitcoin moved up, as did the rest of the crypto space last week. Now, comments from experts are out there all over the place saying, here's my prediction for Bitcoin price. The other thing they're talking about is this whole tax selling pressure. That the reason that Bitcoin and all these other currencies in unison have been down is because all these people that invest in Bitcoin are taking their profits out to pay their taxes. Now, does anybody believe that hoo-ha? I mean, come on. First of all, probably less than 50%, if that, of people that invest in Bitcoin that have profits will be actually looking at booking those profits in order to pay taxes, because there's no tax forms for the most part. There are some companies that will issue, but generally speaking, if anybody here has dabbled in any of the coins and you bought and sold, did anybody receive a 1099? I don't think so. So this whole bogus argument that there is tax selling that's going on in order to pay for the taxes on all this just doesn't make any sense. Now, maybe there's some people that are booking their losses because there's a lot of losses out there after everybody started getting in last November, you know, towards the 15,000 mark, and now it's where, 8,000? The other thing we're seeing is that now all of a sudden, out of nowhere, as we started to see that Bitcoin is starting to move above that, you know, 6,500 level, and it crept up to 7,000 and got to 8,000, everybody's coming out of the Bitcoin world and giving predictions. We got predictions by many that are saying 25,000 by the end of the year 2018. I've seen 100,000. John McAfee is once again stating that he will eat his own manhood if Bitcoin doesn't reach $1 million per coin in 2020. He actually tweeted that today. I put that on there. He said, you can see this on DH Unplugged in the show notes for episode number, what are we at? 404. He said, slowly but surely, the crypto world wizards are beginning to catch up with my Bitcoin price predictions. I stand fully by my certainty that there will be no dick eating on December 31st, 2020. Go to John McAfee. It's Official McAfee. Official McAfee, M-C-A-F-E-E. Yeah. And by the way, if Bitcoin doesn't reach $1 million, I don't want to see this. I just want to see it. For those of you that love the show, even though John's not here, you can give a donation. A lot of hard work going into it by me tonight. I'm grinding it out by myself. Go over to DH Unplugged, and there's a button there somewhere on the side that says donate. Just whatever you can give. It's great. Helps out the process. Fed Limericks, we're going to hold those off for next week. Close to the Pin. Home Depot running right now. We got some people that are pretty close. So check that out. And we'll hold some of this other stuff till next week. Got some information on some ETF companies doing some crazy things. Facebook. On the Tesla thing we talked about. GoPro. So we'll do that next week. What else do we have to talk about? Let's see here. Wells Fargo chart looks miserable. Check that out. WFC. Again, that's on the show notes. I'll talk to John and see if we're going to actually post this week or hold it off. But there we go. I think we finished. So we're going to end it here. Wish John the best as he recovers from whatever he was doing. And make sure to listen to John C. Dvorak on the No Agenda podcast Thursday at 12. And you can listen to him also live on Sunday with Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak, on Sundays at noon as well. You can listen to The Disciplined Investor, by the way. We have some great guests coming up. This week, I believe we have Tim Seymour, you know him from Fast Money on CNBC. We had great guests last week. We got a whole lineup of really good guests coming up over the next few weeks. So make sure to listen to the Disciplined Investor podcast. Thanks for joining us. And John, I wish you well.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.